Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all of the issues. And, oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, it is Friday. It's the day we play applause and the booms and we hit it. And so go, man. Friday! Yes, indeedy, you have made it to the weekend. All we got to do is carry you through these last 3 hours, and we are here for it. And that is Big Rig back on the board. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
How are you?
Good, good. It's been a long week.
It feels like it's like I was out for 2 days. You were out for 1 day.
Mm-hmm.
At least we're here today.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful day, too, by the way.
Yeah, and I'm getting over my sickness, too. So
let's just keep that on your side of the board. All right. Anyway, hey, we got a great show laid on for you. 3 o'clock today, Congressman Gary Palmer will be on the air with us. Congressman Palmer has got a full slate of things happening up there. You know, he's in leadership in the House and also represents a good swath of our listening area here in North Alabama. But Congressman Gary Palmer coming on at 3 o'clock, and we'll talk with him about what's happening with aid to Israel, what's happening with the possibility of removal of Speaker Johnson. I mean, it's really kind of a mess up there, to be honest with you. I'm personally sick of it. But we'll talk to Congressman Palmer and see what he has to say. So that's at 3 o'clock today. And then I got a triple dipper. So hit it, man.
The triple dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right. The triple dipper. Three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. Number one, Israel at war. Y'all, I hope you saw the news last night. But it just keeps getting thicker in the Middle East, with Israel now launching counterstrikes against Iran, nation to nation. We're not talking about, I struck your targets over here in Syria, and they happen to be related to you, and you know why. None of that. They're now blowing things up in each other's borders. And so Israel at war, that's number one. We'll talk about it from a variety of different angles. Number two, I didn't get to it yesterday, so we'll try and get to it today, but we're going to teach y'all a brand spanking new word. So we've been expanding all of our vocabularies right here. We got cacistocracy. We got jackassery. And I'm about to teach you all about codswallop. So codswallop, a British slang term that basically means nonsense. And we're going to talk about the impeachment codswallop of Mayorkas up in D.C. So that's number two on the triple dipper. Then number three, the fast food polls. What? Yeah, so Biden and Trump have both recently made appearances at fast food restaurants kind of unannounced. And the reception they each got was vastly different. And I can't help but wonder, is that like an indication on the street of how things are going to be? The fast food polls, we'll talk about that as number three on the triple dipper. All right, listen, that's a full slate. We'll see if we can get to all of it. Let me move over here to my Right Side Way monologue. And I'll just remind you guys, Southern Immediate Care. Southern Immediate Care, a chain of clinics that covers a huge swath of ground across our overly broad listening area. They are in places like Gadsden, Anniston, Atala, six more locations around the Birmingham area. Southern Immediate Care, open 7 days a week, will see all ages, and they are the sponsor daily of the Right Side Way monologue, and we appreciate it. So here's the thing. Sometimes, I'll be honest with you, sometimes it's just not about who or what you fight. It's also about why and when and where and with what and even how. It's like the five W's. Choosing the battlefield, making sure the terrain on which we fight is best suited to our troops and not the enemy's. Choosing the most opportune time, launching a successful offensive, properly timing the logistics of the fight. Making sure that we employ the right tactics and the weapons. It's the whole five W's. Who, what, why, when, where, and how. A successful tactical or even strategic level fight must have good basis in those five W's. Sometimes there's a catalyst moment. A momentum swing that we must grab a hold of, and even when that catalyst is a loss, because nothing galvanizes a warrior like a determined effort to recoup some lost ground. So somebody I've had an opportunity in recent years to spend some time with, someone who I consider to be one of my personal heroes, is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. You may have heard my interview with him on the show here, but General Boykin had an amazing military career. One of the founding members of what we now call Delta Force. Participation in epic special operations missions. I mean, like, General Boykin was on the attempt to rescue the Iran hostages at Desert One, the invasion of Grenada, where he earned his first Purple Heart, the invasion of Panama, the Battle of Mogadishu, known as Black Hawk Down. He led the hunt for the drug lord Pablo Escobar in South America. At one point, he commanded all U.S. Army Special Forces, the Green Berets. He's also, by the way, a man of great faith great character, who shares his relationship with Jesus often. And in retirement, he now works for the conservative Christian organization called the Family Research Council. And by the way, I would encourage you to read his book, Never Surrender. It's linked on our website at rightsideradio.org. You can find the recommended reading list. And yes, Never Surrender by Jerry Boykin is on that list. So of the amazing missions, though, that General Boykin was on, there are two that became absolute catalysts for change. The first was the attempted rescue of the Iran hostages in 1979, and the other was the invasion of Grenada in the early 80s. So both of these missions were dynamic, audacious, and they were flawed from the beginning. The 1979 mission to rescue our U.S. citizens who were being held in the embassy by Islamic extremists for over a year was named Operation Eagle Claw. I won't go into all the details, but suffice to say the mission did fail when logistical and operational issues on the ground led to a collision and a fire that killed 8 members of the rescue force. It was also part of the downfall of Jimmy Carter's presidency. And the invasion of the small island nation of Grenada, that was ultimately successful, but it suffered from some of the same issues as Eagle Claw. Basically, in all the after-action reviews of both missions, it was determined that the inter-service communications were just horrible. I mean, the Army, the Air Force, Navy, Marines, they didn't talk well together. They didn't have compatible systems. They didn't have compatible support nodes. And they were each, like, really protective of their own turf, and they wanted their own piece of the pie. So as a result, as a direct result, of those two major operations that General Boykin participated in, the U.S. Special Operations Command was formed in 1987. A completely separate joint command, which now has authority over all the Navy SEALs, Air Force Special Operations, Army Rangers, Green Berets, and Marine Raiders. No more infighting, no more lack of communication, no more fussing over taking orders from someone from a different branch or service. It was a unified command structure to fight their battles. So why am I telling you all this? Because here's the thing. We have to consider such things for other fights as well. We conservatives, we cannot forget the broad mission. We must fight on all fronts, and we must use whatever best assets we have available, regardless of whether it was our first choice. We must assess the fight and make sure that we employ the best people, the best messaging, the best tactics, the best timing, and the best locations. And we must do it, y'all, on multiple fronts as conservatives all at the same time. Classic example, the Dobbs decision by the Supreme Court. After decades of striving and working, the right people were elected to confirm the right people to the court to make the right decision at the right time, and Roe v. Wade came crashing down. It's a classic example that one of our chosen battlefields is, in fact, the court system, so we must fight in the courts to protect our rights. A legal battle. We must also fight in the state legislature to make sure that laws here at home are designed to protect us and to give our attorney general ammunition against liberal federal overreach, things like school choice, or taxation, or defending against federal overreach. We must have a state legislative battle. We must also fight in our local school board elections and our mayor's offices, right here at the home front, to make sure that our kids and our communities are getting the best possible and we're not victims of social justice warriors who want to co-opt our kids in school or change things about our daily life in our cities. It's a daily battle for the hearts and the minds and a future of the most precious assets, our children and our communities. It's a local battle. We must also fight, by the way, to send the right person to our governor's office who has the strength and the stamina and the moral compass and the conservative values to put Alabama on the right track, no matter what the pressure. So yes, we need a state-level executive battle. We must also fight to send the best possible candidates up to Washington, D.C., who not only look good and sound good, but who will actually carry the values that this state is known for among its people. That's a federal battle. So all these battles, and more like them, we have to fight them all. And at times, we may have to fight them all at the same time, and it requires clarity of purpose and unity of command. We will not get there if we only care about one aspect of the plan. We must be cognizant that this political movement we're in is an asymmetric warfare, that we are on a battlefield that has no true front lines. There's a song I love. You may know it. It's by Christian artist Michael W. Smith. It's only a few years old, even though he's been recording for like 40 years. The song is called Surrounded. This is how I fight my battles, he says. When you hear the song, you realize that that's just the way he likes it. He says, it may look like I'm surrounded, but I'm surrounded by you, and this is how we fight our battles. So yeah, liberals think they've got us surrounded. And too often, we act like it. Liberals think they've gotten the upper hand because Republicans too often turn around and eat our own and turn on each other. The 2020 and the 2022 elections were just debacles. The street riots, the pandemic, the Biden economy, All of those combined are, to conservatives, what General Boykin's missions in the desert of Iran and the shores of Grenada were to the military. They made us feel disjointed, and we suffered some losses. But I'm telling you, just like the military did in the aftermath, I'm sensing more resolve than ever to do a better job. Just like we learned lessons and bounced back stronger after those military missions, conservatives have got to do the same thing with our fight to win the social, the political, and the cultural battles. And we're going to have to stay in this thing. We're going to have to use every tool, every trick, every technique, every tactic, unified under one banner, planning all the who, what, why, when, the where, and even the how. So yeah, it may look like we're surrounded, but that's how we fight our battles. That's how we win. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. So I had a text earlier today that fit in with John from Harvest, who's just frustrated with the Republican Party. And John, I share your frustrations. But what I just said there in my monologue is a direct result of the same kind of sentiments that you've got in your text. I think the Republican Party had better get their act together. I think we better start acting more unified. I think we better get it all on the table, all the battles, all the front. Asymmetric warfare in the political sense. We've got to do it in every single turn. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like saving the world. One soundbite at a time. Brian from Decatur says, fantastic monologue. However, it should be directed solely at our government Republican representatives. They're the ones that are failing on a daily basis and make me wonder if they're working for us, themselves, or our enemies. Yeah, it's fractured right now, man. And by the way, I tend to lean towards the Freedom Caucus guys, but I also do not want to see Speaker Mike Johnson done away with right now. I think he's been dealt a pretty tough hand, and he's extremely conservative. He's got great street cred in that regard, and so it's a dicey situation right now up in D.C. Republicans have got to quit finding ways to snipe at each other, start unifying in what they do, and you're always going to you're never going to be at a time when you don't have moderates and conservatives, and I realize there will be moments to basically wield influence and get things done differently, but daggum, we gotta square some of this away. Frank from Huntsville said, not truly on topic, but he wanted me to know that a dance team opted out of a show in Seattle because a group felt threatened by their uniforms. Their shirts represented the American flag. He says, since when do we get to feel threatened about the flag of this great country? Why stay here if the flag of the country you live in threaten you? Frank, I have no idea, man, but I can tell you this. You can't cure stupid. It's just laid on thick right now. We are sipping tea at the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, brother. Jeff from Indiana says, good monologue, Phil, but if Republicans could stick together only 90% as much as Democrats do, it'd be a whole new ballgame. But even though Democrats are many more factions than Republicans, we can't seem to stick together almost anything. Well, that's what I'm talking about, man. That's why we've got to use some of the gaffes. I will say this. Let's take a look at a few things. Part of it's leadership. What happened at the RNC? We got rid of, our previous RNC leader. We had a Mick problem, and we got rid of her. And so she's gone. There's an issue that I think has been removed. I also think, by the way, having Trump at the head of the ticket indicates that if we can put things together, we will have a leadership in place that can rally some people to a cause, as opposed to getting some kind of squishmeister in there, like if we had had another Mitt Romney running or something. So anyway, all that to say, text lines are open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text me your thoughts. By the way, I want to reemphasize what I said during my monologue. General Jerry Boykin is truly an American hero. He is, if you don't know of his story, good gosh. I mean, you're talking about somebody who's been there and done that, but not just for the military, which is huge, but also as a man of faith. I mean, he took a lot of heat at times for being a devout evangelical Christian in places where it wasn't that warm and fuzzy. But when they started Delta Force, at first he felt like he was an outcast because he wasn't one of the hard-drinking, bruising guys, although he's a big old dude himself, and he's hardcore. He's hard as woodpecker lips. But he went on to earn their respect to the point that he was even asked to pray before every mission, and that became a tradition. And he actually took a lot of heat when he actually spoke to a church in his uniform while a three-star general. And there was a lot of folks out there saying that, you can't do that. You're in uniform. I got news. He could have cared less. And that's who he is. And he, to this day, he's an awesome speaker. I've had him come speak here in Alabama multiple times. He's been on the show. And listen, that man inspires. And his book, Never Surrender, great read. You'll read all about, you know, rescue missions you didn't know even happened. You know, the raid on Entebbe and things like that that led to special operations and then rescuing hostages. And I'm talking, he's there. He was there in all of it. And the book is on my website, rightsideradio.org. You go to it, go to the recommended reading list, and they'll find a copy of the book there. You can click on it. It takes you right to it on Amazon. It's an adventure read and an inspiring story all at the same time. All right. Gary from Decatur says, my dad told me you can minimize stupid, but you can't fix it. That's good. John from Huntsville says, Phil, awesome monologue. I want to say I really enjoyed yesterday's special dad joke episode, even though Kareem kind of crashed the party at the very end. Yeah. And by the way, John, I will tell you that Lee from Huntsville was proud of her win. Says, tell John, I know it was a pity win, but I'll take it. So so there's that.
Wait a minute. Lee won yesterday?
Lee won.
Wow.
We had Butters and Lee. She won the day.
Wow.
She didn't win on the day she hosted, but she won.
That's yeah. That was a big ordeal there.
That's big. I know. At the very end, apparently, it was it got a little tense. Anyway, John, we appreciate you, man. All right, listen, we're going to take a break here momentarily. When we come right back, we'll be starting off on Israel at war. If you did not catch the news last night, and it is news, y'all, if you did not catch the news last night, Israel launched some form of counterattack. The question is, how did it really go? Why do I say that? Because you got Israel in classic fashion's like, what, something happened? What's going on? Sources are saying, but the Israeli government's not saying. But then there's a lot of surrounding stories on this. What is Iran saying? What just happened at the United Nations? Did we just pass a bill today or almost to get aid to Israel? What the heck? Yeah, we got all kinds of things happening right now that all surround the question of Israel at war. And we've even got an amendment that was proposed to prevent the Biden administration from trying to spend your tax dollars to ever rebuild Gaza. There you go. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. I mean, like covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama, y'all. And I mean, this show goes like, whew, like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, we have an announcement coming out first of the week. I'm looking forward to it, but Right Side is expanding its capabilities, let's put it that way, and I will let you know more first of the week, but stay tuned for that. First Dipper, Israel at war. Oh, my word. So, listen, this is big doings, and I don't want to minimize this in any way. There's an amazing amount of stuff happening in the Middle East right now that has implications that go well beyond that region. Things that happen on a geopolitical scale, things that happen on a, I don't know, maybe even a biblical scale. But what we're looking at right now is the fact that Israel has been at war since October 7th. They've been at war with Hamas. They're leveling Gaza. I mean, like, it's turning into a parking lot. And rightfully so, because the things that happened when Hamas sent its thugs into Israel and the things they did have left a stain on humanity for, God, just for, it'll be there for generations. The things that people endured and what they experienced and what happened, and there's still some even being held hostage for reasons we can't even begin to fathom. That being said, Israel has been at war now since October 7th. And if you think about it, Israel is a nation under siege at all times. They live surrounded. Kind of like my monologue earlier, they live surrounded. They are constantly in a state of tension. And yet they endure. But this past week, we saw something we had never seen before. Iran, that has been calling for death to Israel and claiming that it would, you know, wipe Israel off the map and fomenting all the unrest by funding Hamas and funding Hezbollah and funding the Houthis. And if you think about it, the same Iran, by the way, who, while I was in Baghdad, was funding militias and teaching them how to best kill U.S. troops. We had something like 648 troops that died because of what's known as the EFPs. And that's a I forgot what the E stands for now, but it's basically a force projectile IED that blows right through the side of an armored vehicle as it goes by. Deadly. That's Iran. So yes, Iran has been responsible directly for the death of American soldiers. Iran has been funding and fomenting unrest in the entire region and really around the world. Iran has got its proxies in Syria right now, where U.S. troops are engaged. It's a mess. But what we saw last week was new and different. Iran didn't use its proxies. Iran tried to launch a massive barrage against Israel. Hundreds, like upwards of 400 armed drones, ballistic missiles, and land attack missiles were launched that flew across Iraqi and Jordanian airspace to try and hit targets in Iran. Their goal was to saturate a bombing across population centers in Israel to do terrorizing damage. And they were wildly unsuccessful. Wildly. I mean, like, embarrassingly unsuccessful. 99% of them were shot down before they ever even reached Israel's borders. Israel's Iron Dome and David Sling anti-aircraft systems were amazing. And Iran was embarrassed on the world stage. But the fact that they tried to do it meant something too. And Israel then had to make a choice. What do we do now? Do we sit here and idly sit? And the Biden administration was urging Israel to use restraint. Use restraint? You just launched 400 missiles at our people. Use restraint? Well, that's classic Biden administration, because we're being led by cowards right now. And I'm not overly hawkish, by the way. I'm not out there looking for a fight all the time, but I'll be honest with you. If someone swings the first punch, you better be ready to do the knockout blow to end it. So Israel last night did something, and it's still a bit of a mystery, but we know that things began blowing up in Iran last night. Story here on Fox News. Israel strikes sites in Iran in retaliation for the weekend assault. Israel carried out limited strikes in Iran early Friday in retaliation for Tehran firing its barrages of missiles and drones at Israel last Saturday. A well-placed military source has told Fox News the strike was, quote, limited. Well, that's what the Biden administration was asking for. Limited. Sources said the U.S. was not involved, but there was pre-notification to the U.S. from the Israelis. Fox News confirmed there have been explosions in Iran's Isfahan province, which is where Natanz, one of its nuclear facilities, is located. Now, to what we know right now, the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, they have come out and said the nuclear plant was not hit. So we don't have to worry about a meltdown. We don't have to worry about, you know, some kind of collateral contamination. But the bottom line was, Israel struck near it. That alone was designed to send a message. It is believed that what happened last night was a strike to show Iran that you may not be able to get past our Iron Dome, but we can get past yours. You don't have an Iron Dome. You don't have the same system capabilities that we have. And so Iran just got poked hard. Former Israel Defense Forces spokesman Jonathan Conricus wrote that while Iran appears to be downplaying the strike, he thinks they got the message. And the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem did issue a security notice Friday morning out of an abundance of caution, restricting its U.S. employees and telling them to shelter in place. Here's the bottom line. It's a mess, but we now have, for the first time ever, Iran and Israel striking from nation to nation. Iran, I don't want to minimize. I don't want to say Iran won't ever get through or cause something to happen. But Iran thought they had it going on, and they got backhanded. Israel came back and launched a limited strike, but it was basically like saying, you can throw a punch at us and we'll block it, but we're going to deck you right in the nose. And they did. They put it on some key strategic sites. Story here on the Daily Wire. Says subsequent reports said the explosions did happen near a military base where Iranian fighter jets are located. Senator Marco Rubio, vice chair of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, said that just moments after the news of the strikes became public that, quote, Israel has the ability to conduct strikes against targets inside Iran without entering Iranian airspace from aircraft over Syria and Iraqi ground. So, but what he's basically saying there is, yep, hey, Iran, Israel can do what they want to do. They have the capabilities. and you don't. We do know this, though. Iran has threatened retaliation, but it's believed right now in you know, geopolitical speak, it's believed right now that they are going to take a hiatus from the fight for the moment. I think they're licking their wounds. Me personally, I think Iran is sitting back going, holy crap, we just did, they blocked it all. How'd they do that? I don't think there's any mystery how they did that. I think God's on their side, for one. But the other part of this is Israel is far more advanced, and Israel lives, like I said, in a constant state of war, y'all. Can you imagine? And Israel is geographically about the size of New Jersey, has a population of 7 million. So they've got land mass that is maybe a third of Alabama's, with 2 million more people than Alabama has in it. I mean, they're packed in. But Israel is a little nation that does a lot of big stuff. They are little in geography, but they are big in their capabilities. Story here from the Jerusalem Post. Israeli officials said an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. They retaliated where they were attacked. Officially, Israel is not going to accept responsibility. By the way, this is what Israel does. It's classic Israel. Something blew up over there? Huh. What do you know about that? Everybody else is going like, we'll take credit. Hey, we did that. We're on the world stage. Just look at us. We blew something up. Israel's like, something blew up. Don't ask us. Everybody knows they did. Israeli sources told the Jerusalem Post that it's unclear why the Pentagon, though, chose to disclose to the American media that Israel had been involved. So what Israel's saying is, yeah, you just did that. Why'd you tell everybody, America? Well, America was the voice piece on this one for them. But like usual, Israel is not declaring itself to the world. Okay, so what are we going to do? Well, right now it is being said that we did not participate in last night's explosions. That we didn't do that. We didn't aid or assist. But I will tell you this. There's a fight going on right now as to whether or not we are going to be able to provide assistance in the future. Part of that fight is the question of funding. And part of that fight is going on literally as we speak, and Congressman Palmer is calling in a few minutes, and we'll get his thoughts on what went down. But there's a real divide in Republicans right now. And the reason why, I think the Republicans, generally speaking, all want to support Israel. They don't want to support Ukraine anymore. They want border security here in the U.S. But in order to get this passed, Speaker Johnson believed that he had to go ahead and advance a package of bills that had Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan all in it without border security. I'm frustrated by that. I am extremely frustrated by it. At the same time, I want aid to Israel. So GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson, according to CBS News, had the foreign aid bills pass on a 9-3 vote out of the House Rules Committee, which means it can go forward. It then came to the floor this morning, and with Democrat support, it got the procedural votes it needed to advance to the House floor. It's a $95 billion package, y'all. $95 billion. $26.4 billion for Israel, $60 billion for Ukraine, $8.1 billion to counter China in the Taiwan area. Conservative hardliners like Thomas Massie, Chip Roy, and others all voted against it. But Democrats joined with the other remaining Republicans and got it passed so we can move forward. I get a little concerned when I see that. Let me take a phone call. Is that Allie? Allie from Athens is on the line. Hey, it's Allie. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, Colonel. And I just wanted to say, number one, I'm distributing your mug as we speak all over North Alabama.
Nice.
And what, yeah, it's my pleasure, sir. And what we chose to write about for this publisher's point is called Thank God for the Dead Sea. And the way that I set up the comment piece was this. I don't know if when we were in the Great Sandbox you ever had a chance to do an LWOP, a leave without pay, and go float in the Dead Sea, but I did. I've gotten the chance to do it from the Jordan side, and I've gotten the chance to do it from the Israeli side. And I'm telling you, you cannot do anything but float when you're in the Dead Sea. And so it was with great pleasure that we published Thank God for the Dead Sea with the picture of the 3.5-story AMOD missile just floating, just bobbing right in the middle of the Dead Sea. It gave my heart great pleasure, and I do think that we will see more divine interventions, because you cannot mess with the apple of God's eye.
There you go. Thank you, my friend, and you're spot on. All right, have a great weekend, Ms. Allie.
You too.
All right, on that note, we're going to take a break. And by the way, I see a couple of y'all texted in. KB from Hartsville squared me away. EFP is an explosively formed projectile. Thank you very much, KB. That was it. All right, you guys, stay tuned. We got more of that. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, wow, making common sense like a superpower. Don't forget, coming up here top of the hour after the next break, we'll have Congressman Gary Palmer calling in fresh off the House floor where they have been voting. Apparently that aid package I just talked about just announced on the news that it is up for a floor vote tomorrow. I suspect that it will pass. So anyway, we'll talk to him about that and see where it goes. Tom from Tanner, Alabama says, Hamas and Tehran need to be taught. Don't start nothing. There won't be nothing. Tom, you are so right. George from Huntsville says Iran exposed itself as a paper tiger with that attack. I think that's true. And the question is, how much of their stockpile did they burn? And where are they now? Stephen from Madison says, wax on, wax off. That's what Israel did. Raven from Russellville says, speed, surprise, and violence of action gets the job done. Yes, indeed. There it is, sir. Jeff from Town Creek, thank you, man. I see your information, so I appreciate that very much. Big Rig, if you wouldn't mind on Jeff from Town Creek writing down what the information he just sent us, I'd appreciate it. Let me jump in here and get a little more stuff of my stack of stuff out before we hit the top of the hour with Congressman Palmer. So just so you know where we are with Israel. So we're looking at voting on aid to Israel, but at the same time, Iran, according to Newsmax, Dateline yesterday, Iran is now mere weeks or maybe days from having nuclear weapons material. Let that sink in. The whole death to Israel, death to America country, the one that just launched 400 missiles and drones against our chief ally in the Middle East, is expected to be, or suspected to be, no more than weeks or days away from having enough fissile material to create at least two nuclear weapons, according to sources. A 2015 nuclear deal with major powers has eroded over the years, says Newsmax. Iran has expanded and accelerated its nuclear program, reducing the time it would need to build a nuclear bomb. A senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard commander said on Thursday that Iran could review its nuclear doctrine amid Israeli threats. Unclear what he meant, but it didn't sound good, obviously. Its stock of enriched uranium, which had been capped at 202 kilograms, now stands at 5.5 tons. That's a bit of a difference. That's just last known in February. They're now enriching uranium up to 60% purity. They have enough material enriched to that level, and if enriched further, to go to two nuclear weapons. So their breakout time could be close to zero, matter of weeks or days. It doesn't mean they can weaponize it yet, but it means they've got the material they need now just to be, and I would bet they've had concurrent research going on delivery systems as well as enriching the material necessary. The question is how long it would take them to create an actual nuclear weapon. Studies indicate that if they got the fissile material to do it, it could be anywhere from months to a year. The last thing we need is a rogue nation like Iran that has already indicated it's willing to launch missiles against allies unsolicited having nuclear weapons. In fact, I don't think we're going to let that stand. I don't think Israel let that stand. The U.S., by the way, did issue some new sanctions. Story here from the Washington Examiner. U.S. Treasury Department announced a new series of sanctions against more than a dozen people and entities involved in Iran's drone production. Oh, good. A little after the fact, that's like saying, you know, you already, you know, played a whole round of golf. Now we're taking your clubs. But okay. An attempt to cut off Iran's ability to manufacture its missile and drone program to isolate the country on the global stage. 16 people were sanctioned, as well as several other entities. I don't know how to explain that, but that's the Treasury Department. That's the Biden administration. Keep in mind that much of the restrictions that have been put in place by the Trump administration were lifted by the Biden administration and now being put back in place. Why? Because apparently they worked. And I mean, the Biden administration has given Iran everything it needs to do all of its damage. They're making billions off of oil sales that have been embargoed. We gave them $6 billion in cash with a hostage, you know, exchange. It's unbelievable to me. The Biden administration, in my opinion, bears direct responsibility for much of the unrest we're seeing because their foreign policy is no policy. They have no policy whatsoever except appeasement. Their goal is to try and keep the peace by making everybody happy. Can you please? Just please. Can you not? I don't wish. And then they say, don't. How did don't work out for you? What kind of response is that? Mr. Secretary of Defense, what would you say to your Iranian counterparts if they are thinking about launching attacks on Israel? Don't. Mr. President, what is your message to Iran? Don't. Actually, let me do what Biden says. Don't. That's more like Biden's voice. But the bottom line is this. You cannot possibly appease an enemy like Iran and expect them to just go, okay, thanks for helping us out. We won't do anything mean anymore. Coming up next, U.S. Congressman Gary Palmer. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. And we're about to bring on a guest. Congressman Gary Palmer has been on the show several times. Most of y'all know Congressman Palmer as representing the 6th Congressional District here in Alabama. He's a member of our House leadership and a member, of course, our U.S. delegation from Alabama. Staunch conservative and a Republican. His career prior to heading up to D.C. was as the founder and running for several decades the Alabama Policy Institute, which you hear about all the time on this show. So without further ado, let me just bring on Congressman Gary Palmer. Congressman, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. You guys have had your hands full up there in D.C. here of late.
Yeah, it's been pretty messy.
Well, I want to talk about some of the mess, if you don't mind. I could spend all day with you, to be honest, but I guess what's hot on the plate right now are two things, and one is the aid package, which passed its procedural votes, I understand, with Democrat support today to get it across the line, as seems to have split the Republican caucus. But then the next thing is the other split in the Republican caucus is two more congressmen apparently have joined the push to relieve the speaker of his job. So let's take the aid package first, if you wouldn't mind describing that and where you see it going.
Well, there's actually four bills. I'm reading the fourth bill right now. I just got it a little while ago. The other three are aid for Israel, aid for Ukraine, and aid for Taiwan. And obviously the most controversial one of the bills is the Ukraine aid. I offered two amendments to the bill that were not made in order, which so they will not be considered. I've said all along that any additional help for Ukraine needs to be on a loan basis, backed up with collateral from Ukraine. And I offered one of the amendments was to make the entire package a loan, backed up with collateral from Ukraine, and the powers that be decided not to put that in there. So I think that's problematic, and among other things as well. But it also has a section that says any of the funds not spent on the authorized, as authorized in the bill, may be returned to appropriations, in other words, returned to the government. And I offered a simple amendment, just change the may to shall be, and they didn't rule that in order.
Wow.
I'm of the opinion that where we are with our national debt, if there's any money appropriated for a specific purpose and that money's not needed, we shouldn't hand it off to somebody else to spend it on something that is not even relevant to what we were appropriating, and it needs to go back to the government. So the Israel bill, I think part of the problem with that that some people are going to have with that is that there's humanitarian aid for Gaza, and it's been misrepresented by some as a $1 billion payment to Hamas. That's not true. because it's very specific in the bill that no money will go to Hamas. That said, I don't support the aid because money's fungible, as you know, and they'll just substitute money from somewhere else, from Iran or someplace like that. So the Taiwan bill, I'm more positive toward. I was in Taiwan last summer in the Philippines and Guam, and looking at where we are in terms of our forces, in terms of being in harm's way and what needed to be done. And having gone through that bill very carefully, it appears to me that that is the most thoughtful one of the three in terms of actually meeting immediate needs for U.S. military, particularly with facilities. So I'm more positive about that one.
Well, so let me ask
you. And like I said, I'm reading the fourth one.
You've got, these are all traveling as separate appropriations bills, is that correct?
Yes, in the House.
Okay, in the House. And so is any of this tied to border security, which I know has been a call by some on the Republican side, asking for, if we're going to do anything for Ukraine, it's got to have our own border security being taken care of first. And I've not heard that mentioned. So is that a no?
Well, no. The first bill we vote on tomorrow is a modified version of the bill we passed over a year ago, H.R. 2, the Secure the Border Act. And that bill, the only change that I know of is that we took out the E-Verify requirements from H.R. 2. And that'll be, I think that's the first bill we vote on tomorrow. And that may impact how some other folks vote on these packages, just whether or not we pass that bill. But here's the thing about that bill. We passed H.R. 2 last March, a year ago, and it sat on Schumer's desk. And I've had reporters stop me and say, well, what are you going to do to give the power to secure the border to the president? And I said, we've already done what we need to do. We passed it out of the House. It's in Schumer's office. All President Biden needs to do is pick up the phone, call his buddy Chuck Schumer, and tell him to pass the bill, and he'll sign it. So I don't know that this changes the dynamic. I don't know that we have any guarantee that Schumer will take up the bill, and it's subject to filibuster, so one Democrat senator could stop the whole process. So I don't know. But we're bringing that bill up, and
well,
that'll be the first one we vote on tomorrow.
Well, I'm glad it's the first one. I think that's symbolic to get it out the gate first and indicate that we've not forgotten our border security, because I know that's been a real concern in the grassroots. But let me ask you this, because I don't want to run out of time without talking about it. In the middle of all of this is Speaker Mike Johnson, who is trying to balance the weight of the overall body and also within his own caucus. And I know that there are a number of members of the Freedom Caucus, and I generally tend to lean towards Freedom Caucus vote styles and positions and policies. But I'm concerned about this movement right now to oust the speaker again, and I have to question the veracity and the timing of that. But what are your thoughts? Does that have legs? Is that going to happen right now? Are we going to be within 6 to 7 months of an election having to find a new speaker all at the same time?
I sure hope not, and I appreciate the fact that you see the danger that this creates for us. Phil, we're on the verge of World War III, and the speaker is third in line for the presidency. It would be, in my opinion, and with all due respect to my colleagues, insane to do this again. And honestly, I know people think, well, Palmer's gotten all liberal because he supported McCarthy, but we had momentum. We were moving things. And when they removed McCarthy, I mean, we could have waited another 14 months or whatever it was before. And if we didn't like him, we could have removed him in the next Congress. But it created absolute chaos. And it's been taken advantage of by not only the Democrats and the liberal media that are relentless in their attacks on us, but it's being taken advantage of by foreign adversaries, because we can't do anything. And we bring bills to the floor, or try to bring them before, and a lot of my colleagues are voting against bringing bills to the floor. And we're having to do stuff on suspension. And you know, as a former state senator, that when you're bringing stuff by suspension, what you're doing is having to have the other side vote with you to get anything done. So I think it'd be not only a mistake, I think it'd be a tragic mistake to do this again. And well, especially, as you point out, 7 months before the next election.
Well, I agree. And I was not as much a fan of McCarthy as you are, but I'm working at it from afar. I'm the outside looking in. But at the same time, I really do think that what we see in the character and the background of Mike Johnson is somebody that I think could carry the weight for a while and do a good job at it. And he's also and I recognize the narrow margins within which y'all are working right now. I mean, you've got like what, just a scant few handful of votes that you've got to have a majority. And if you lose any, you have to go to the Democrats. And that's a lose-lose proposition sometimes.
We've got one. And what I'm saying about McCarthy is not a judgment of whether you're a fan or not a fan. It's a judgment of whether or not the timing was right. And what it when you consider the condition of the country, the issues that we're dealing with here, and then what was going on worldwide, the timing was incredibly poor. And in regard to Mike Johnson, he and I knew each other before either one of us ever got elected. He is a godly man, Bill. He is a good man. He asked for people to come in and pray with him yesterday. I was one of them. We went in to pray with him. And he is under absolute assault. His family's under assault. And I'm amazing the guy can still stand up straight with all that he's having to deal with.
Well, and there's more to come, I'm sure, because I don't see the polarization and the dynamics of where we are getting any better. Not only that, but we have national security issues of our own, and we've got a presidency that's doing everything from changing Title IX and depleting our oil reserves. And it's just there is so much in place right now that I think the last thing we need is to decapitate our leadership. You guys have got a dogfight on your hands. Tomorrow, these votes come to the floor. Are we expecting all four of the appropriations bills to make it to the floor tomorrow, plus the border security bill?
Yeah, the border security bill will be first, and then the other four bills are all supplemental appropriations, and they'll come before individually. And then they'll go to the Senate, and what the Senate does with them is anybody's guess. But I want to comment on what you said about Biden. He is, without question, the most dangerous president and most destructive administration in the history of this country.
Yeah,
it has done enormous damage, not only to our financial situation and our debt, but enormous damage with our allies. Because they know they cannot count on him.
Yeah, I look at it overall. I mean, just from the broad perspective, whether it be economic policy, foreign policy, military policy, social and cultural policies, I can't find anything where I can go, well, he's got that okay. None of it. I mean, it's like he's taken a wrecking ball to America, and November elections can't hear quick enough. We got to change.
Let me give you a quick example of this real quick. I ran a think tank, so I like to do research. I went back and looked at the Border Patrol's convictions, okay, not arrests, not investigation, convictions under Trump and under Biden. And it was last updated February 13th of this year, so that's 3 years and 1 month of Biden. In the 4 years Trump was in office, they had 11 convictions for murder and manslaughter. Under Biden, in 3 years and 1 month, 165.
Wow.
That's convictions, not arrests, not investigations. Lincoln, Riley's not counted that. Rudy Garcia's not counted in that because their murderers have not been convicted. There were 431 sexual assaults during the 4 years of Trump. 1,210 as of February 13th of this year under Biden. And I know not your listeners voted for Biden, but if they talked to anybody that did, I just want them to think about these parents.
Yeah.
And what Biden said in the State of the Union address, that there are more people killed by illegals. And by the way, I'm not illegal. I'm a citizen.
Yeah.
As some kind of way of saying, well, this all evens out. That is pure bull crap. And I guarantee you Lincoln Riley would be alive today if they hadn't let that guy cross the border.
Well, and all the more reason why I wish the Senate had moved forward on the Mayorkas impeachment. which I wish I had time to dissect with you right now, but I think everybody knows what happened there. That was partisanship.
Yeah.
Well, Congressman, thank you for your time. We're got to leave it there. I'm running long, but blessings on you, and our best to Speaker Johnson, and y'all hold the line, all right?
I'll tell him. Thanks for having me on, Phil.
All right, thank you. Take care now. We'll run to a break. I did run long on purpose because I wanted to get as much time as we could, but the Congressman, we'll come back and have a very short segment to catch a few text messages and give you the end of this section. But yeah, folks, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a Freedom Caucus leaner, but I do not agree with the idea of trying to take out the speaker at this particular juncture. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Got a very short segment here because we ran long with the Congressman, but is that Jeffro? Jeffro from Indiana. What are you doing, man?
I'm getting ready to go through the gauntlet of Nashville.
Oh, so you're on your way back north, though.
I'm already on my way back north, well, thank goodness.
Good deal, good deal. What you thinking, man?
I'm kind of angered at Israel for retaliating against Iran the way they did.
How so?
I think they should have thumped them instead of just having a metered response.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's going to take. You know, everybody always says, oh, you know, when Israel does anything, you know, they get attacked from all sides, and when they respond, it's, oh, no, you got to respond in kind, or it has to be a metered response. Well, I want them to respond the same way that these people attacking them is. You know, when they shoot, you know, thousands of unguided missiles into Israel, and they, you know, hit anywhere they just land or whatever, I think Israel should do the same. I think they should respond with unguided missiles into the population and just wherever they land.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a in-kind response.
Well,
they can't do that.
I tend to agree. The only issue that, though, is the logistics of it, because if they were to launch 400 the same way that Iran did, it would deplete the arms that they need to be able to use in their fight currently ongoing in Gaza, and then preparing for responses that could come from other directions like Hezbollah to the north. So I think maybe not 400, but I would have loved to have seen something blow up that was significant and that the world could see, and not just have Iran go, oh, nothing really happened, no business to see here. I think we needed something significant to blow up. And I agree with you. I wish it had been a little bit more, you know, up tempo.
I mean, I think it's going to get down to they're going to have to nuke them before it's over with, because just like they talk about the nuclear power plant in Iran. Why does Iran have a nuclear power plant in an oil-rich nation?
Oh, it's only for electricity. That's all it's for, just electricity. Nothing to see here.
Of course. No, of course not.
No,
I'm
listen,
sure
man.
That's probably a carbon footprint, maybe.
You know, Israel has never confirmed that it has nukes. It's been largely believed that it has them, but it has never confirmed that it has nukes. And I cannot say a good idea would be to go nuke Iran, because I think that all of the support that Israel's gaining from Jordan and from some of the neighboring countries that are leaning more towards Israel, Egypt even, I think they would be lost. I think they'd lose world support in a big, big way. But I do think they could have done more than what they did.
Yeah, it's like the United States in World War II. You know, we didn't have to drop nuclear bombs on Japan, but it sure did save a lot of lives. I mean, you know, really, the incendiary bombs killed more people than the nuclear bombs did.
Hey, brother, my music's playing. I got to run, dude. I got to run.
Be
safe on the road, buddy. We'll see you. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on the major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, Alabama. Y'all are talking about this show. Goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, folks, I will just remind you guys, as you hear the advertising playing during the break, just know this, that's part of how Right Side Radio does what it does and stays afloat doing it. So we are a business, unlike some other stations that have the shows that just play their own stuff. We are a standalone entity. We send our show to the stations and they play it for you. They don't own us. So that way we have the ability to do the content we want. That being said, it takes a lot to run a business, and one of the ways we do that is by selling ads. So think about this. We have some of the highest ratings you can get for an afternoon show. And we also, by the way, have, we are told, well over 30,000 listeners every single week calling themselves Right Side Ruffians. And if you're a ruffian and you've got goods or services you want to sell, well, here's a captive audience full of ruffians that might rather buy from you. So if you'd like to advertise on Right Side Radio, we'd love to talk to you. Just get you the information you need. Go to our website, rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. Click on the advertising and contact tab. Send us a message, and Lauren from Right Side will contact you in a heartbeat and give you all the info that you need to be an advertiser. We would love to have you on the team. Advertise on Right Side. Go to rightsideradio.org and send us a message. A couple of text messages real quick. KB from Hartsel just texted in. He's the one that squared me up a little while ago. I couldn't remember the type of, or the name of the IED that Iran sponsored or helped train on. It's called an EFP. It's called an explosively formed projectile. And then he just texted back, said, enjoy your show, Colonel. Thanks for your service. He was a retired sergeant first class with three tours in Iraq and two tours in Afghanistan. Man, appreciate you, KB. Thanks for your service, man. Iran, let's see. This is Dustin from Hillsborough. If Iran launched over countries other than Israel and one of the weapons they shoot down is nuclear, doesn't that rain nuclear material down in that country? Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And I'm sure there was debris falling all over Jordan. And by the way, Jordan shot down a bunch of them too. Jordan and U.S., I think F-16s were used to help strike down some of the drones that were flying. So we definitely had interaction from other countries. But yes, you are correct. If they were to launch some type of fissile material and it was shot down over Jordan, that would definitely mean radioactive material. Plus, think about this. Israel's so small. You launch a nuke in Israel, the radiation, the fallout, is not going to be contained. It's not like it'll stay within the borders of Israel. It will be, there will be a plume of radioactive fallout that will go well beyond the borders. It's way too small for that to be an effective. Even a tactical nuke with a low yield capability is going to go far and away beyond the target zone. So it would create, and that's the other thing. You know, they can, what's it take to make a nuclear device? Well, it takes more than what Iran has right now, allegedly. What's it take to make a dirty bomb? You can, do they want to do that, though? Here's the other thing. Keep in mind that one of the greatest shrines in all of Islam is in Jerusalem, the Dome of the Rock, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And that is something that's considered sacred in Islam. It's one of the top tier sites in all of Islam. And so if that were to be covered in radioactive dust, that would mean that they just struck at their own faith in a sense. They would be condemned for it, Iran would. But anyway, there's that. Got a new texter in the line. Need to get your name. Says I think his name is Larry. If you get his stuff for me, man. He says, Phil, great interview with Palmer. We were in D.C. last week for our national legislative conference, had 20 of us from Alabama, and he took us all on a Capitol tour at 8 p.m., and it lasted until 10:30. He was fantastic with all of his historical knowledge. Thank you for that, Larry. And by the way, Larry, tell us where you're from so we can put you in the system. Thanks for texting. Yeah, Congressman Palmer's a class act. He really is. He's one of the good guys. And I'm familiar with his work because, like I said, I used to be, after I left the State House, I did 3 years of work with the Alabama Policy Institute, which is where this show sprang out of. And the Alabama Policy Institute was founded by Gary Palmer. He's a good one. So thank you, Larry. We're glad to have you in the show, and text us more often. All right, one more piece of this before I switch dippers. And if you're welcome to text in or call in, by the way, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. One more piece I wanted you to know I forgot to mention in my last batch there in Dipper number one. There was a vote this week at the UN to determine whether or not Palestine would be recognized as a nation state for the UN membership. Story here on the Times of Israel. It was the U.S. that did veto it. So on the National Security Council, the U.N. Security Council, the U.S. has veto authority. We're one of the permanent members of the Security Council. So there are rotating seats, but there are a number of the big nations that do have permanent seats, U.S. being one, and we do have permanent veto authority. It can be unilateral. We can veto anything we want to by our own vote. doesn't require a majority or a consensus. So we were the sole vote that stood in the way of basically Hamas being allowed to become a member. Well, no, Phil, it's called Palestine. Yeah, it's Palestine, but right now it's Hamas, and you know it. The final tally, it says, showed that the Biden administration, though largely failed in its efforts to gain support. Here's the thing. You may look at that and go, oh, U.S. got a victory. Is it really? Is it a victory when France and Japan and South Korea and Slovenia, all of which are supposed to be our allies, disregarded our efforts to have them vote against it with us and not leave us standing alone? And what did they do? They voted for Palestine, meaning the Biden administration cannot even negotiate with our allies, y'all. Think about this. The UN, which is sitting right up here in friggin' New York City, the UN, and we've got France and Japan and South Korea and Slovenia all voting in favor of a resolution that was submitted by Algeria, of all things, to recognize the Palestinian state for the purpose of nationhood and UN status. Well, we've been opposing this for years. But I will point out, the U.S., we were trying to rally people to be counted on our side in the vote. Nobody would. What does that tell you about the Biden administration's ability to conduct foreign policy? If you can't even get your allies to vote on something we've all voted against in the past, and they're just willing to go ahead and go, yeah, sorry, dude, we're not with you this time. Good luck with that. You know you got it. You can vote for yourself. Just vote for yourself. It'll be all right. So it shows us standing by ourselves at the UN. It won. I mean, we kept Palestine from becoming a state. But Biden cannot even negotiate with France, with Japan. We have military bases in Japan. We have protection agreements with both countries. France is a member of NATO. We can't. Where is Antony Blinken? What does that man do for a living? This boggles my mind. We had a 12-member Security Council voting in favor of granting the Palestinians full UN member status. The UK and Switzerland abstained. What? So Great Britain's not even standing with us. They're like, well, we're not going to vote. We'll stay out of it. We're going to abstain. Well, abstentions go with the majority, I guess, technically. But you know what that means? They weren't willing to cast a vote. So France and Japan and South Korea voted against us. UK and Switzerland chose not to help us. The others were like, game on, dude. Let's get Palestine in here. And the Biden administration is like, dang, okay, we'll just do it ourselves. Leaving themselves standing there flat-footed, having to do it by themselves because they can't even rally their own allies. That's where we are right now. This is almost like a mini rant, but that's where we are right now. The Biden administration has so devastated the image of the United States on the world stage that even our allies will not side with us on the simplest of votes. And that is maddening to me. It is absolutely nonsense. It is a shame. It is a blight. We're one of the founders of the United Nations. We host it on our soil. We're talking about South Korea, who we saved from North Korea. We're talking about Japan, who we rebuilt after World War II and became great allies and we do massive trade with. We're talking about France, who we saved in World War II and who's a member of NATO with us. We're talking about the UK, who we stepped in and rescued when the Nazi Germany was raining buzz bombs down on their cities. We're talking about Switzerland. Switzerland. How much trade do we do with Switzerland? And none of them will stand with us for the simplest of votes to say that, no. Look at, you've got corruption and you've got mismanagement in Palestine right now. You got the West Bank, which is just basically, you know, thuggish and sort of getting by. And you've got Gaza, where Hamas has got 400 miles of underground tunnels from which they launched attacks on Israel, killing over 1,300 Israelis just 6-7 months ago. And we cannot even get our allies to say, yeah, we're with you on that vote. Don't worry. They're all like either we're staying out of it or we're voting against you. Meanwhile, Biden's flat-footed and can't do anything except try to figure out how to create stories about his uncle being eaten by cannibals. What the heck was that even about? That's where we are on the world stage right now. Listen, I just ran that thing all the way to a break, so I'll take a break right now. I'll come right back, and then I'll kick off the next Dipper. Yeah, we're learning a brand new word today. Codswallop. You ever heard of codswallop? Codswallop, man. Add that one to your repertoire and use it at the next Sunday school party. You'll be a hit. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, wow, making common sense like a superpower. Yeah, we got some common sense conservatism going on here. Hey, listen, I've got to teach you a new word. It's new to me. Some of y'all may already know it. I mean, I used to live in England. I didn't know this word. It's a British slang, but I like it. So on this show, you know, we have our own style, right? We got Right Side Ruffians. That's what all y'all are. We got some Right Side Ruffians, and we talk about cacistocracy. I'd never heard it before, but I love it. It's now part of the show. It's woven into the fabric of what we do. A cacistocracy is a real word that means a government led by the least competent of its citizens. Well, I think we're operating in a cacistocracy right now. Another one we use quite often is jackassery. Some of y'all texted in, you'd never heard that word. I'm not sure if I coined it, but anyway, what we see quite often out of our current government is a lot of jackassery. And when we see it, we play the sound, jackassery sound. But then I got a new word for you. Big Rig, have you ever heard the word codswallop?
No. Never.
Can you imagine what codswallop might mean?
To the top of my head, no. Maybe like, I don't know. It sounds like you're babying somebody. I don't know.
It's not a bad guess. Yeah, you're coddling them, but no, it's codswallop. It's British for nonsense.
Okay.
That's a right load of codswallop, I'd say. That's okay. What we're talking about here.
Okay, when you do the accent. I can hear the context of it.
Okay. Yeah. So, a codswallop spelled CODSWALLOP. Put that one in your repertoire, in your vernacular. Use it on your next Scrabble board. But you take that one with you to the next, after hours gathering or a Sunday school party or wherever, and just tell them, man, that's a bunch of codswallop. I guarantee you people are going, what? What'd you say? What do you say to me?
What's the origin of that?
It's British slang is all I know.
Just British slang. Does it have anything to do with a fish? Cod?
I don't know, dude.
I'm just trying to understand it.
It now has everything to do with things that we see out of D.C. Codswallop.
Hey, okay. I can get on board with that.
Yeah. So
nonsense.
So get used to it, folks. We may, I don't know how we're going to, I may have to find, you know what? If you can find, Big Rig, I've got an assignment. If you can find a British voice out there talking about codswallop, then we may wind up having a new sound effect.
I'll look around.
That's a right load of codswallops, what that is.
Okay.
Oh, blimey, the codswallop.
We just record you doing it.
I lived in England for 3 years. But I used to could do it and passably so. But anyway, and then there's accents, by the way, I can't do. The guys from Oasis, they're from Manchester. They can sing, but I can't understand a word they say when they talk. Do it. Go figure.
This sounds like gibberish.
Yes, it is. I mean, how many? How many? How many? Hey, and they're like, well, I don't know what you just said to me. I had a British SAS soldier that came out to my remote area in Afghanistan, and he would talk, and I'd look at him and go, I don't know what you just said to me. Do you have an interpreter? but anyway, codswallop. All right, so we're going to talk about the impeachment codswallop. The impeachment that never was. So Alejandro Mayorkas and the impeachment codswallop. This is maddening. It's not that we didn't get him through the entire impeachment process. It's how it went away. If you are not, let's remind you. Here's the way it works. The House takes up the articles of impeachment. Someone has to refer articles of impeachment on whoever, in this case, Alejandro Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security. We're watching our border get run over. We're watching literally federal law being disregarded. We're watching right now as chaos ensues on the American public. Every state's a border state. People are dying. Fentanyl poisoning is everywhere. We're seeing cities and towns overrun and strained to their utmost, having to cut their city services to be able to fund housing for illegals. Listen, at some point, turn them away, y'all. Just tell them we're not doing it. We can't keep housing you. Don't come here. But so Alejandro Mayorkas, he was the articles of impeachment related to basically a dereliction of duty, willfully and systemically refusing to comply with immigration law and a breach of the public trust. It's a grand and gross mismanagement. It's reckless. And it should be impeachable. And so the House passed its articles of impeachment. What happens next is the House almost acts like a grand jury. If you're familiar with the criminal prosecutions here in the United States, a grand jury can hear the evidence and decide whether there's enough there to indict someone, after which they still have to stand trial. All right. So in this case, it's as if the House, the Congress, acts like a grand jury. It hears the evidence. It decides there's enough there, and it indicts. In this case, it impeaches. And it impeaches and sends it forward to the Senate. The Senate then becomes like the trial court. The Senate takes it from the grand jury, so to speak, the House, and puts it on trial and conducts a trial. Now, the Senate can choose to acquit. The Senate can choose to hear the evidence, all laid out in a more formal presentation. And the Senate, the members of the body, actually sit as like a jury. And then they vote. Do we impeach or don't we? Just like a jury would. And they can wind up being tied. They can wind up voting one way or the other. But what happened this past week was amazing. Because Mayorkas was impeached by the House, it was referred to the Senate for action. The Senate chose not to take action. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. What just happened this past week is precedent setting. And it's going to have ramifications that carry forward. And it's going to wind up, there's going to be some payback. But what I'm afraid of, though, is it's also diminished the capacity of a much-needed tool called impeachment. And I'll tell you all about it when we get back. Impeachment codswallop. Oh, blimey. We'll be right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. John C. from Madison texts in, says they ought to send the article of impeachment up every week to the Senate. I think, yeah, I agree, man. But I think they actually have to re-vote every time, and good luck with that right now. Point, since it was just deemed unconstitutional by vote of the majorities, the Democrats, he says, well, then I guess I have to make a separate motion. Should we just dismiss all the articles? Yes, we should. Okay. And so they did. 51-49. That's the vote. Y'all, that's just maddening. That's gross, to be honest with you. Ted Cruz, on his own podcast, The Verdict, The Daily Wire has here that he came out and slammed the Democrats as the impeachment proceedings were due to begin. He says Democrats are willing to throw the Constitution in the trash in order to avoid any national attention on the disaster playing out on the southern border. He says Schumer and the Democrats are terrified of the evidence of the suffering of people who've died, the people, the children who've been sexually assaulted, the women who've been sexually assaulted, the fentanyl deaths, the drug overdose. They don't want that evidence put before the American people. It was a desperate move. And I agree. That's all it is. They're not about protecting Mayorkas. They're about protecting the image. They're about protecting themselves because they got some people like Senator John Tester up in, was it Montana, who is barely hanging on right now by a thread. He's a Democrat who's got a very tough election. He's facing a former Navy SEAL who was a really strong Republican candidate running against him. And he voted for it. It's going to be used against him. Story here on the Washington Examiner, though. I guess this would be the now what. So now what? Now what do we do? Well, Republicans were reacting to the dismissal of impeachment charges, according to Washington Examiner's reporter David Sivek. He says, warning Democrats that they would soon regret their decision to skip a trial. So the most immediate repercussion was political. Senate Republicans spent months blaming Mayorkas, and they wanted their day in court. They wanted their day to deal with it. And they deserved their day because the House had done its job. The House did its thing and sent it up, and the Senate just like, no, we're not going to do that. Well, okay. But the most lasting effect of Wednesday's impeachment trial, which Democrats concluded without hearing from the House impeachment managers, was the precedent that it set. For the first time in history, the Senate cut short the impeachment proceedings. Yep, never been done before. If Senate Democrats can ignore the House's articles of impeachment, then Republicans could wind up doing the same, is the warning. Senator J.D. Vance, Republican of Ohio, said, I suspect Democrats will come to regret what happened today. But Democrats, yeah, well, there may be repercussions, but they did what they did out of preservation. That's what I'm telling you. The implications for future impeachments are indisputable. 45 Republicans voted for an unsuccessful measure to deem the second trial of then-President Donald Trump unconstitutional. GOP senators conceivably could do the same if they control the chamber. Senate Democrats just showed voters they will do nothing to hold Joe Biden accountable, says one. And then there's Senator John Tester, who I just mentioned a minute ago. Yeah, he would not say what he was going to do. He didn't want to mention it. He held his cards close to his vest to the very end, but he finally voted to dismiss the charges. And I hope he pays for it. I mean, that's one of the races that's really being watched right now. One of the beliefs is that the Democrats are going to face some real challenges in their Senate reelections. We could see the balance of power shift, and we need to. Can you imagine if we can get Trump in there? With all the stuff going on with him, and flip the Senate and keep the House, well, all the damage could be undone if we could just begin moving forward. But I hope it's decisive. I mean, I'm so sick of these slim majorities. Here's one thing I will say: this, the Freedom Caucus, is a smaller group of the ultra conservative members of the House, but they have more clout right now because the Speaker can't lose a single vote, so he's got to deal with the conservatives. Now, I really believe the Speaker is a true conservative, but he's stuck in an awkward position right now. All right, story here on the National Review. This is Andrew McCarthy, legal scholar, Andrew McCarthy, former prosecutor, Dateline yesterday on National Review. He says these were abuses of power representing what we call maladministration. Impeachment does not require a penal crime. So that's the unconstitutionality that Mayorkas got over on was the idea being foisted by Schumer that somehow there's no high crimes and misdemeanors. Do you see a crime? I don't know that's a crime. All he did was they say he didn't run his department correctly. Well, no. The framers used the terms high crimes and misdemeanors to also mean, says Andrew McCarthy, maladministration. In other words, poor jobs of running what you're doing. And he says, as Hamilton said in The Federalist, number 65, it is a political offense sounding in the abuse of power. It does not have to be a common crime. In other words, he doesn't have to be convicted of a Trump crime like they're talking about up in New York, right? He can just do so poorly at his job that he can be impeached for it. Dereliction of duty is a political offense. Failing to enforce Congress's immigration law and igniting a crisis of illegal immigration is a staggering abuse of power, says Andrew McCarthy. How remarkable that Democrats would impeach Trump in the 2019 Ukraine kerfuffle, which they called an abuse of power without a penal crime, but believe that it's unconstitutional to do so for Mayorkas. He said, for the most part, this is politics and not law. And it's amusing that Senate Democrats tried to claim the constitutional high ground. Yeah. The constitutional authority was vested in the House. It was up to the Senate to decide if they wanted to acquit or not. And they chose to dodge altogether. It's codswallop, man. Absolute nonsense. Complete and utter codswallop is what we've got. And it's shameful. And like I said, I'm afraid that it has set a new precedent. All right. Listen, we got more to come. I may get Dipper number 3, the fast food polls. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, y'all. I'm talking about Alabama. Man, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, and by the way, who else covers a lot of ground? That'd be our friends at Southern Immediate Care. Do not forget, Southern Immediate Care, one of the sponsors of this show, is a chain of clinics that covers like this huge swath of ground across our overly broad listening area. So yeah, Southern Immediate Care is in places like Gadsden, Anniston, Atala, 6 more locations in and around the Birmingham area, newest one being in Helena. And y'all, every one of them is open early and stays open late 7 days a week. I kid you not. And they will see all ages, pediatric up to geriatric. So your kid gets sick on a Saturday morning, do you wait till Monday? No. Southern Immediate Care. Go check them out. And by the way, this is who I use personally. I've been in there this week. Southern Immediate Care. They are so clean and professional and friendly. And every time I've been in, it's been just like a breath of fresh air. And I thought, I'm going to go ask them if they want to advertise because I can brag on this. And that's the reason why it all came about. So, yes, Southern Immediate Care is who I use. So let me just challenge you. If you need medical attention, look them up. Find the location nearest to you. Head on down there. And while you're filling out the forms, tell them, hey, I heard about this on Right Side Radio. I'd appreciate that. All right, let me jump on in here. I'm going to get a few text messages, and we're gonna cover my last little dipper here. David from Huntsville. Mayorkas lied about it. He said the border was secure multiple times. You are right, David. By the way, glad to hear from you, brother. Gary MS from Huntsville says, when Trump took office, we had the House and the Senate. How did that work out? Worked out better than it does right now, I can tell you that. Gary from Decatur says, Democrats always do unprecedented things because they will always get away with it by staying together. Republicans can't seem to stay together on anything but legislative session recesses. Well, I ain't arguing, man. I'm with you. That was my conversation with Gary Palmer earlier. John from Harvest says, I'm getting sick and tired of our leadership or the lack thereof doing things to make history in the dumbest ways possible. Yeah, bro. And where's that text? We had, who was it that said something? Yeah. Nope, not that one. Hang on. Somebody said something about the, there it is. Was it Jeff from Indiana must have said it. Where'd it go? I lost, there it is. The Biden cacistocracy. Okay, he says, the Biden cacistocracy produces an enormous amount of codswallop. And I think we ought to go in and say the Biden cacistocracy produces an enormous amount of codswallop wrapped in jackassery. Play me some jackassery real quick. Just hit me one. Just because we can. There it is. All right, let me jump into the last dipper of the day as I take y'all all the way into go-home time. So it is Friday afternoon at 4:37. Some of y'all are about to hit the road. Be careful on it and have a great weekend. Let me just do this third dipper. I'm calling this the fast food polls. Have you seen what's happening with Biden and Trump as they walk into fast food? I mean, literally, they're walking into fast food places and the amazing amount of difference in the two. It's like we're back to the days of Biden doing his campaign from the basement where he carefully went out once in a while and people had to sit socially distanced from each other in circles. And he talked to them kind of benignly, and he still got half the vote. All right, that's where we are right now, except that it's almost amusing because Biden staggers in to a fast food joint, right? I mean, it sounds like a joke, but it's real. But it's also a joke. He staggers into a fast food place, and it's like a nothing burger, no pun intended. It's just a big, fat, like, nothingness. He walks in. There's hardly any attention. There's, like, hardly anybody there. He looks at the menu like he can't figure out what's going on. He stands there. The lady at the counter tries to tell him a few things. Somebody starts to approach him. One of his entourage says, "You get back. You need to get back now. Step back, please." Okay. And he goes, "I'm gonna. You got milkshakes? I want the kind that has the dark and the light together. Yeah, I'm gonna get a black and white milkshake." And that's what he, like, you're looking at him going, "You're embarrassing." And he's got somebody actually with him at the counter helping him figure out what to pick. I kid you not, watch it. Trump walked into Chick-fil-A last week. The place went bananas. Chick-fil-A, so it's always crowded.
It was Chick-fil-A in Atlanta, which is a, you know, it's a haven for Democrat votes. But he just walks in. The place goes crazy. You got people rushing up. He's hugging people. He's laughing. He's having a good time. He's yucking it up with folks. He bought everybody in the restaurant milkshakes and chicken sandwiches. And the staff all gathered at the counter. They all wanted to talk to him. A couple of them rushed around from behind the counter. Can I hug you, Mr. President? You know, they're having the best time. And oh, by the way, the demographic of the crowd was fairly well mixed, but black and white both were loving on President Trump. And so I looked at this and I thought, it's like this is a clear indication. We hear the polls all the time, right? This is like the fast food polls. What happens when one walks into a fast food restaurant and so does the other one? I hope it's an indication of what's going to happen at the polling sites.
Did Biden really try to order a black and white milkshake?
That's what he said. I watched the video.
Wow.
I want a black. I want a black. What do you got up there? He's like squinting and doing the thing. And what is that? You got milkshakes? Yeah, I want a black and white milkshake. Black and white.
Okay. That's a pretty good impression.
That's just awful. It's just awful. I don't know which one I like least, Angry Joe or Lost Joe. They both embarrass me.
Yeah.
But Trump, man. So here's the thing. Daily Mail has a piece that came out yesterday. It says, the campaign fast food fight. Biden purchases sandwiches for construction workers days after Trump bought Chick-fil-A for a whole restaurant. So President Joe Biden attempted to rip a page out of his predecessor's Donald Trump's playbook. Trump made a surprise visit to a Chick-fil-A in Atlanta on April 10th, where he told a dozen employees behind the counter, we're going to take care of customers. And he went on and bragged on the food and said, we're at Chick-fil-A, right? Y'all are closed on Sundays. This is like the Lord's chicken. He's having a big time with it, and everybody's laughing and cutting up. Biden, he went to a place called Sheetz in Moon Township, Pennsylvania. They sell fast food. It's also like a convenience store. It's beloved up in western Pennsylvania, so, you know, it's kind of like going to an icon kind of place up there. But the crowd was a little less enthusiastic, says the article. The crowd and the employees smiled politely at Biden, dressed in his famous aviator sunglasses. He did get a picture with the cashier, but it was far more formal than Trump, who just worked the room. Trump just worked the room. He just went around talking to people. How you doing? What's going on? People were getting selfies with him, having a big time. And then, that's kind of the difference in the two. Story here on the Washington Times says, Trump blazes the path to the White House through Fast Food Nation. And I'll tell you what else, too. He's using his time. He's stuck in New York right now, Trump is, because the criminal trial. He's not even been allowed, by the way, to go to his son Barron's high school graduation. He's not allowed to leave to go to the graduation and miss a day of trial. The judge wouldn't have any wouldn't hear it. Just classic. It's just asinine. But he's that's the Lord's chicken. Anyway, Mr. Trump's series of fast food pit stops has become a signature part of his third presidential campaign, served as a reminder of his enduring popularity with the working class. It's also helped draw a sharp contrast with Mr. Biden, who has difficulty generating enthusiasm among his own base. Mr. Trump's rousing receptions at his unannounced campaign stops are reflected in his poll numbers. He's gaining significant support among racial minorities and young people who have long been reliable voting blocks for the Democrats. He is solidifying his backing among working-class voters of all races and ethnicities, particularly white voters without college degrees. According to a recent Wall Street Journal poll, Mr. Biden leads Mr. Trump comfortably among black voters, but he has shed significant support there. The poll found that 30% of black men plan to vote for Trump, which is up from 12% in the 2020 poll. That means there's a significant... Think about the narrow margin on the last election. So if just, and I almost hate to do the demographic looks because I feel like I'm dividing up voters, but the polls will poll by demographics. So if he's up, literally up 18% on black male voters, that alone could swing an election that was as close as last time. But then you got the young voters, and it's all because Trump is doing his populist style. He's not afraid to get out among the people. These fast food polls, so to speak, are having an effect. But here's the one that I love the most. And it's not truly fast food, but it kind of is. It's the same premise, let's put it that way. So Trump's stuck in New York But he says that being stuck in New York is having a reverse effect because he goes out every night and just sees folks. He's doing retail politics around New York City, his hometown. And he went to the New York bodega, little, you know, little side store, where a guy last year, remember this? This guy last year was a little old man, was sitting in his bodega, 70-something years old, and a street thug came in and tried to rob him and started beating him up. And the man grabbed a knife and stabbed the guy to get him off of him. Self-defense. The criminal died of his wounds. Alvin Bragg, the DA who's now trying to prosecute Trump in this crazy trial, decided to bring up the man on charges of murder for daring to defend himself in this little bodega. It's all on surveillance camera. You can watch it. The popular uprising that occurred against Alvin Bragg for doing that, he even had calls of like a recall vote and stuff like that being thrown around. He decided to drop the charges, and the bodega man was able to go home. Trump went to that bodega yesterday. So this is like a double issue here. Trump's not only visiting somebody and being populist, he's going to the place that the prosecutor who is prosecuting him lost big in the popular vote. He showed up at the bodega. The crowd went bananas. I mean, gathered up on the sidewalk. He sat out there on the sidewalk just talking to people, slapping high fives, getting selfies. And what's crazy is it was largely a Black and Hispanic crowd who were shouting, "Trump, Trump, four more years." They were having the best time. And it's a clear indication that what's happening right now is that Biden's base is slipping. I am praying that this next election means that Biden's out, because I fear for our country if he gets four more years. I don't know that he knows he's there for... I don't know if he knows where he is most days. But the fact is that his name will be on the nameplate on the desk. And we need that removed. But what we're watching, these fast food polls, as I call them, are people like story here on Fox News. The Trump crowd outside the bodega yelling, "Trump, Trump, four more years. We love Trump," singing the national anthem. And him getting a chance to just speak off the cuff to people and just do what he does best. He's a retail politician. And these pit stops he's making are huge. He's totally flipping the script on his adversaries. It's as if the guy who has to sit in the courtroom all day is able to go out and almost shake it off. And it's cathartic, I would imagine, to some degree. All right, listen, we're going to take a break right now. Last break of the day. We'll take it. We'll come right back and put a lid on the week, man. Are y'all ready? It's go home time for a spring weekend. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll come right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. Hey, shout out to Grandma Wanda from Coleman. We lovingly call her Grandma Wanda. She just called in and chatted with Big Rig during the break. So, Grandma Wanda, we love you. Hope you're doing well. Ken from Harvest says, it's good that Trump is making inroads into minority voters, but there's a large voting bloc still controlled by Democrats. The dead still vote Democrat. I shouldn't laugh, but ballot harvesting in the graveyard, man. Joe from Indiana says, if Schumer violated his oath to uphold the Constitution, can he be removed from Congress by SCOTUS? So here's a question I have. I'm going to follow your question with a question, Joe. Joe from Indiana. I was talking to the lovely Charlene yesterday about Schumer making that constitutional ploy, and I think we got to find a way to challenge this and have the Supreme Court determine whether or not the articles as referred were in fact constitutional. Now, I don't know how we bring that. I mean, I'm a lawyer, but I'm not the legal scholar that some of the people that go on Fox News are. But I look at this and think, is there a means by which someone can bring that cause? Like when I was in the state Senate, we were allowed to do a thing called an opinion of the justices, where we as a legislative body could ask for an opinion of the justices. So I wonder, is a Speaker of the House, do they have any means by which he can do that at the federal level? I don't know the answer to that question. But can he get an opinion of the justices as to the constitutionality of the articles? Would they agree then to review it even? They might kick it back and say, we will not get involved in an ongoing measure. But I think at this point, though, it's technically killed. So why didn't he go ahead and... I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question, Joe. I do believe that Schumer violates the Constitution on a regular basis. But in this particular instance, if there's a means by which we can get the Supreme Court to rule on the constitutionality of what was done, then we'll know for future reference, and they can't pull this one again. Republicans or Democrats can't pull it. We got to get that sorted. It's codswallop. Becky from Shelby County says, something, her voice text is messing up.
She said, "Hey, seal," but she meant to say, "Hey, feel," but she probably said it like, "Hey, feel."
Got that southern accent kicking in, Becky. Yeah. Becky from Shelby County says, last night on one of the Fox stations, they showed the manager of that Wawa station preparing the workers and what they were to do what would be done when President Biden came to see them. Everything was staged. I have no doubt. I have no doubt. Becky, you're spot on. And you know what, though? You'd think they would at least try to stage some enthusiasm. When he gets here, everybody look excited. But no, it was like, and when he gets here, everybody look like you're at a funeral. Hi, Mr. President. What you need? What can I help you with, sir?
Black and white milkshake.
But I want a black and white. I'm a black and white. You got milkshakes? I got a black and white milkshake. It's unreal. Gary from Decatur says, too bad he has to talk about Trump. Too bad he has to do retail politics in a state he can't possibly win, but it won't hurt if social media gets video feeds of these encounters. That's a great point, Gary. Now, he's enjoying the ability to push back on the image that somehow he is the defeated Trump. He's a criminal being prosecuted. He's out there having a big lark of a time. He's stomping his old grounds. I mean, he's the guy, right? He's the one who helped build part of Manhattan. Anyway, nonetheless... yes, everything's a soundbite, and you can replay these things nationwide, and he's getting a lot of press coverage out of it. So there's that. John from Huntsville has the grades in. He says Big Rig is an A double plus for his spectacular performance. Today's winner is obviously Phil with an A triple plus. Whoop, whoop. Perfection and congratulations. Also, just want to say if Trump walked into an authentic Mexican restaurant where all the employees are legal citizens of the country, he would get a massive amount of cheers. If Biden walks into that same restaurant, he'd be escorted out and directed to the nearest Taco Bell. yeah, I don't know, man.
That was good.
It's a mess. It's a mess. Listen, you guys, we're going to have a great weekend. Hope you are, too. Stay safe and enjoy your weekend. Remember, you got a brand new word to add to your repertoire. We got cacistocracy, we got jackassery, and now we have codswallop. I will review codswallop in more detail over the weekend and hope that I have not offended our British friends.
That one's going to be pending.
It's in the dictionary now, though. The right side dictionary is growing as we speak. Submit your words. I'll be glad to consider them. For right now, we're going to look at that one in great detail. You guys are an amazing audience, and the reason why we do what we do is because of y'all. We could sit here every day talking to a mic and nobody listens, and what good would it be? But we know from the ratings and we know from the response that we've got the best audience in all of radio. And I'm going to tell you right now, I mean it when I say it. We do this because of what I call the mission and the message. And the mission is that every single day I want to do what I call the four E's. I want to educate, enlighten, empower, and entertain you on what it means to be a Christian and a conservative walking around in today's world. Common sense conservatism, y'all. At the same time, that's the mission. The mission is driven by the message. And the message on this show is that every single day, I hope you gather up that we stand for the fact that Jesus is Lord, America's great, Alabama's beautiful, and yes, life is worth living. That's Right Side Radio in a nutshell. You guys have a great weekend. We love you. We'll see you Monday.